Welcome to the Scalable Real Estate Investing Podcast, where we discuss the most scalable strategies, tools, and approaches to successfully invest in real estate. Learn how to make the most impact of your time, automate your real estate investing business, find off-market deals with minimum time invested, and leverage your capital to create as many income streams as possible so that you can achieve true financial independence. Thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Mason Clement. Hi, Scalable Investors. Before we get into today's episode, I'd like to tell you about a group that I'm a part of called Hivemind. If you're serious about taking the next step in your real estate investing career, then this is definitely a group that you need to join. Some of our members are making $90,000 or more per month and as much as $300,000 on just one deal. And at the same time, you don't have to spend thousands of dollars like you typically would joining other mastermind groups. This is only $99 per month. And when you join, you'll gain access to a robust integrated CRM software that allows you to track your leads, run automated triggers, and ultimately scale your marketing efforts. So the difference here is that you're not left high and dry, but gain access to a support network that allows you to use that tool and learn from other more experienced real estate investors. So to learn more, go to scalablerei.com/hivemind. That's HIVEMIND. Thanks a lot. Let's get into the episode. Hi, Scalable Investors. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Scalable Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Mason Clement. And today we have with us David Van, who is the founder of Easy Land Investing and is also an active coach to land investors looking to start their land investing business. He works with Jack Bosch and Jack's Land Profit Generator program. And in this episode, we cover a lot of key topics that he feels is necessary to be successful in the land investing business. So really excited to have him on the show. And we do go a bit unscripted in this episode, so you'll be able to learn a little bit more about me as well and what I'm doing in my business. So hope you enjoy it. Let's get into the episode.
So this is really exciting for me because your background and your experience level just like life experience is very, 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 very typical of the land flipper. Okay. So you would definitely fall right into the people that get success flipping land, you know, because there is a type and the type is that it is a numbers game and there has to be a criteria for these numbers. And if we don't follow the criteria, we're just not going to get results, you know? And so my role with the Land Profit Generator is I just kind of play support, and I'm not a coach. I don't want to be a coach, but I definitely talk more than anybody in the world about land flipping. So that's why it is a cool experience for me to talk to you about your business, and hopefully people watching this can take something from it, because I just did a talk yesterday on reverse engineering your business model on the county. If you're not doing that before you're downloading leads, then you're gambling, and that's not what we want to do, right? And so, like, for me, a very typical, extremely typical deal, as in fact all of my deals, is I'm going after like $20,000 properties and below, okay? And then I have 67 deals right now that I got for 15 cents on a dollar. And so when I get it under in that price range, but if I go up in a different price point, if I go up in a higher price point, no millionaire is going to sell me their $1 million property for 15 cents on a dollar. That's insane, right? So I can raise my price point, but I'm going to have a lot of profit there too, right? And so we have to, number one, focus on how much money are we trying to target per deal? Like, that has to be like step number one, right? Yeah. If it's 10 grand, I know exactly what to do. If it's 20, I know exactly what to do. If it's 100, I know exactly what to do. And then we take the profit, and then we look into what kind of properties are going to be able to support this profit margin, right? And then we look into the counties. And I'm sorry, Mason, I'm sure you probably already know some of this stuff, but this is obviously for everybody else too, is that then we're looking into counties that have enough inventory. Right. I mean, if I'm mailing a county that only has 200 leads, I'm only going to get like a half of a mailer out of it, and then I'm done. You know, I really want to stick in that county for a while, you know. And so I just did a county, and there was like 88,000 leads in that county, but 18,000 of them fit my criteria. And I mailed 4,000. I got 16 to 20 deals. It was at least 16, maybe 20, if I'm remembering right. And out of 4,000 mailers. So now I have so much, I have so many more leads that I can go back in there and get more, you know? And I think where people stumble starting out is they're trying to do too many counties, too many different price points, too many different criterias all at once. And in my opinion, I'm here to say that is definitely not what I would wish the new investor to do. You know what I'm saying? So I have a square. I'm going to put it in a square hole. That's what I'm looking for. And that's an investor, right? And so I'm looking for my profit margin, and I'm making sure that it has sales inventory in that county to make sure it can produce that. And then now, how do I get these deals? And then here's the secret, guys. Who am I going to sell it to? Right. My target demographic is selling properties where I can sell a picture of an RV in a mobile home, and it says, put your RV here for half the price of an RV park. You know, put your RV here 200 feet away from a lake. Put your RV here a half a mile away from a state park for half the price. You know, that's my target demographic. And so all of those things together is going to give anybody a lot more confidence going in before they press that big red button on the mailers, right? And so I think that's what we all want, is just confidence before we actually take action too. So,
got it. Yeah, I think I misunderstood initially. So to directly answer your question about the criteria, initially I was doing like smaller lots, like maybe a quarter acre. A quarter acre. to like maybe 5 acres at most, but most of the people get maximum like a quarter acre. And recently I just sent my first one where I was like, I need to shift and get to larger transaction sizes because I just can't waste my time making a couple thousand on each of these little lots. And then those are like just to get flex, you know, more reps in to build the foundation. But I feel like I've done that now. I've done over 10 deals, which is like the magical threshold most people say get your ropes straight, like from what I've heard from several investors. Anyway, so now I'm doing, last mailer was 1 to 400 acres. So it's just a huge wide range, and it's a neutral letter.
Big difference.
And we'll see, because I don't want to even talk to quarter acre lots anymore. So
Yeah. Well, you know, thankfully for me, it's the reason I stumbled across this was too, is because 50, 60% of the people that called me about a property was, can I put my mobile home on it? Can I put my RV on it? Like, that was what they wanted to know. And I was like, man, why don't I just sell property to these people? You know, because there's definitely enough of them, you know? So, what are some other things that you feel like when you've talked to new investors, what do you think that they struggle with as well?
So what I've seen, I'm part of this other group where we have a CRM software. It's like a CRM mastermind mix called Hivemind. You might have heard of it. It's kind of new. So I think that there's a couple of people that focus too much on getting everything set up and making it look pretty and looking like an established company, and need to actually just take action and just put things out there and stop researching and stop like spreadsheeting yourself to death, is what I've heard it termed as.
Man, dude, you nailed it. Oh man, that's such a good call on that. Because that was myself too. Okay. So I remember I heard this thing. It's like, you got to have a good website to sell. And so I was trying to design my own website, and it took me 6 months and I got nothing done. And then I commissioned a friend to do it for like $400, and he did it in like 2 hours in a Starbucks. And I was so embarrassed that I wasted 6 months before I got inventory. And it was just such a learning lesson for me. And you are so right that people do spreadsheet themselves to death, and they're looking for that secret criteria. And another thing that I get too a lot is they're going after out-of-state owners, in my opinion, too much. That county that I got 16 to 20 deals, I think there was less than 1% out-of-state owners in that county. And I know investors right now, they would completely skip over it. Just completely skip over that county, like altogether, like not even mail it. And so, but that's here in Texas. And And when I checked the numbers on some counties in Florida, there was one county where it was almost 50% out of state owners, almost 50%. And just that change, that complete contrast of things, it might attract too many investors to that county for me, you know? And so one really good tip of understanding is, am I getting into some competition? Is checking like the days on market and checking the style of the listings. Mason, I'm pretty sure you can look at a listing and know, is it a land flipper or not that listed this property? You know what I'm saying? And it's just the style of the pictures and like the text overlay and some of the description, stuff like that. And obviously they're not realtors. And so when I see too much of that, I'm like, okay, I am not touching that county. And so that's just some pre-market analysis that I think most people don't do. They really don't do, you know? So.
Yeah, that's something I've definitely learned after doing a few mailers, is that it's really valuable to get familiar with it first. And I think that it's still, you can't research it to death because you have to pull the trigger eventually, but it is helpful to do some preliminary work. Like the one mailer I did, I drew my polygons and data tree and I blasted this wide area and I bid them all at 4,000 per lot. But then I later learned that this one area in particular, they slice it up to 0.1 acres on each of them. And you need two adjacent lots to have room for a septic system. Mm. So I had to like revise my offer on mostly all of my inbound leads. And it's like, yeah, I can buy one for 2,000. So I'm going to cut my price in half and be a complete scam artist. And I know I hate myself too. And it was just torture for a while, but I still got some deals out of it.
Yeah. It's funny that I was talking yesterday about my first mailer, and I think I did everything wrong on my first mailer. And I was so devastated. It was so emotionally devastating when you feel like you did, like you messed up your mailer, you know, because it's like once it gets out there, dude, you can't pull it back. You know what I'm saying? You just can't pull it back. And it's almost like as a parent watching your kid ride their bike for the first time down the driveway without a helmet, you're just kind of crossing your fingers that everything goes right, you know? And so, but yeah, I did everything wrong and thank God I still pulled a deal out of it and really made some really good money off it. But it was a really good lesson on things that I skipped over. Things that I skipped over was, is there too many farms here? Is there too many oil rigs? Has the market changed in the past 2 years? Those three things I didn't check. I just mailed it because somebody gave me a tip and I thought he was a better investor than me. So I just trusted it and I paid for it, but I still made money. But I think that is a good lesson is current data matters. Old data doesn't. Old data does not matter at all. Yeah.
So, you mean like within the past 12 months?
So that story was, I met this guy. We both started at the same time, like listening to podcasts and trying to understand how to do software and stuff like that. And what mailers are. We kind of like started at the same time. And so he said that he's been studying this stuff and he made this spreadsheet. And I was like, I want something north of Dallas, you know? And he was like, oh, this is the best one in the world. This is the best. And so land was going for $3,300 an acre in that county at the time he told me. And so his data was a year old already at that time. By the time I wasted 6 months trying to do a website and then 3 months of deciding a county, it's almost like 2 years later, land was now selling for $10,000 an acre in that county. And so there was three reasons why. And it was like, you know, Jack Bosch and Land Profit Generator talks about, you know, some things to avoid is this county all farms, right? If it is, there's not going to be very many leads. And then is this county like all oil rigs, right? Because no one's going to really sell their property if they think they're going to make money selling oil, you know? And then the current market caught up to like the expanded market of Dallas caught up to this county and word got out, hey, you know, investors are coming in, you know, you can sell at a higher rate. And so by the time I mailed it, it was just too late. And I just couldn't get anybody to accept my 5 cents on a dollar offer. And but thankfully I got one and I made great money on it, and it changed my life. It really jump-started everything, because it really validated me that I'm new, I can do this, and I did everything wrong and it still worked, you know. So that was just a huge confidence booster. Yeah.
Okay. So 5 cents, then you sold it. What were you able to make ballpark on it?
Well, it was a $300,000 deal. I got under contract for 52. Okay. Sold for 150. Okay. So yeah. And I initially offered the full story is I initially offered like $30,000 for the property. And then he called me, and this is a great influence for new investors on follow-up. And that's really what I'm focused on too, Mason, is just kind of encouraging people to follow up with their leads, because I don't feel people do enough. And if you're watching this and you remember this story, and please, please, please do this. He called me up and he was like, so mad at me, cussing at me. He's like, how dare you offer me so little? I'm a land flipper myself too. And I know land and yada, yada, yada. And I ain't going to take anything less than 200 grand. Don't even call me for anything less than 200 grand. And I said, all right, let me go back to my partner. Let me check to see the comps. Let me do my absolute best for you. I'm going to come back to you tomorrow within 48 hours with the best, absolute best price I can do. And he says, don't call me unless you come back with 200 grand. And I said, all right. So I called back with 52 and he took it. So normally, I was new at the time. I would have been too intimidated to call him back. I really would have. And but I consulted with a friend and he said, just make the offer. And so I did, and he took it. And that changed my life. And that started the journey right there. So yeah, it was fun.
Okay. So were you working a day job at that time?
Yeah, I was a truck driver. I was a FedEx truck driver. Loved it. Best job in my family. But I hurt my foot one day and it scared me, because if I can't go to work, I can't get paid, you know? And, you know, I was 35 years old at the time and I'm like, man, I'm getting older. You know, how long is this going to last? You know, and I hurt my foot. And then I started to realize that real estate is where it's at. Like, I don't have $1 million to invest in the stock market and hope it goes up 10%. You know, and I don't have the education for it, but 90% of the first time millionaires come from real estate in America. And so I was really encouraged by that. And then I did some digging and digging and digging. And I watched podcasts like yours. I watched podcasts like Jack Bosch's, and I went on YouTube like every day, all day. And that was the whole reason I got YouTube Premium or whatever, you know, so I could listen to it with my headphones on while I'm driving. And I found out that land flipping is the easiest, fastest, cheapest, safest investment asset class of real estate. Absolute cheapest. And so I was like, all right, if it's the cheapest, then that's where I'm going to start, you know. And so I've done deals as little as $100 and sold for about 10,000. So like, but the buy price, like as little as like $100 and as high as 300 grand. So for me, cheaper, safer, easier was like, it was comforting to me. You know, it gave me confidence that I could do this too. So, cause if all breaks loose, then the worst case scenario, I just bought some property for $100, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think one aspect that really attracted me to it was just 100% cash financing it, because you get to decide how long you want to hold it for, and there's no debt payments you have to make, and you're in ultimate control. And actually, I turned to full-time just focusing on real estate investing after losing tons of money in option trading and other stock trading strategies that I learned. Like, my mind was polluted from like the CFA and all this other stuff. Yep. Like, the only thing it does is like give this artificial confidence to jump in there, start pulling the trigger and trading options and get complicated naked options. You don't own the underlying stock, and just a great way to lose money. So if you're looking to lose money,
that's a good quote.
Stock options, then just contact me.
That is a good quote, man. I like that. It's a great way to lose money. That's really good. Oh, I'm taking that.
Yeah, you don't have any control. Like, honestly, like I literally lost like thousands of dollars one time because Elon Musk made some little comment at a conference, and suddenly Tesla just blows up. It goes this was just super volatile. And I was like on a neutral position where I was like, I think it's going to trade within this range. The options will expire worthless and I'll keep my premium. That didn't happen. I got killed on like both sides. So
not to get too technical, but
that's a very high level thing. Yeah.
That's really cool. So you were doing options, right? Yeah. Were you doing Forex too, or just stocks, ETFs?
I've considered Forex, and I've had people tell me how to use technical analysis to trade as it breaks through Bollinger Bands and stuff like this. It's really interesting. Like, oh, if it deviates more than two standard deviations, then it's definitely going to retract back into that Bollinger Band range. And anyway, I've used that on stocks, but I haven't actually used that on Forex. But I did start, the trouble was when I got into trading options on futures, and I was trading options on oil futures and soybeans. And I was trading soybeans when there was a trade war with China, and I guess about the middle of Trump's administration. Mm-hmm. And
interesting.
And soybeans just like plummeted because China purchases 50% of all of production. And they were like, oh, we just want to purchase it. We'll purchase from someone else. We'll grow domestically, whatever the issue was. So the prices were just plummeting. And because the supply was going up, no one's buying it. And I was like, oh, it's definitely going to rebound. It's breaking through all the technical indicators. Yeah. I'm going to make a fortune on this. But as it continued to plummet, I'm like in a just growing negative position. I lost $15,000. Yeah. And that's when it hit me. We could have bought a rent house.
Yeah. Wow.
For that much money. And then we did. We still had some cash remaining. We're like, why don't we just put it in a real asset?
Wow.
Instead of losing money.
Yeah, that is a really good story. Cause I could definitely, I feel your pain. Like I could see the numbers going down and you're like, oh my God, it's like catching a falling knife, you know? And
day after day though. It wasn't like one day. It was like two weeks straight.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah, I remember I was playing Forex and I was like at a stoplight and I had to trade, but the light went green and then I had to go. And it was just like too late, you know? And I had already lost my money. And I was like, wow, I can't put myself in a position where like I have to respond to like a text alert, you know, my whole wealth depends on a text alert, you know. And that's the thing I love about land. And the other thing too, guys, is like the housing market is like, I wouldn't say it's unstable, but it's volatile, right? It will go up and down, right? Depending on the economics and the demographics of the area, right? Well, land is extremely stable. So if it curves up, I mean, it's curving up like so slow, you know, and if it curves down, it's curving down so slow. And it's a trailing indicator of houses, right? So if house market is going up in that area, well, land will eventually go up in that area too. So it's just a lot safer technical analysis, in your words, to do the market research. And, you know, it doesn't, like, I would say the prices like might change on a yearly basis rather than a weekly basis compared to houses, you know? And, it's stable. Yeah. So your position in Clubhouse, I like to go on there every Thursdays at 4 PM and just kind of talk about land and just like some quick tips. And I really like focusing on like the new investor, especially the people like they really want to hit on their first mailer, you know. Have you been able to engage other flippers and stuff like that on Clubhouse, and what's your experience been so far there?
So I joined Clubhouse because a guy was in Hivemind, and he was actually a member of Land Investing Pros run by Willie G and you know Paul, and that's how I met him, the interest in Hivemind. And anyway, they have this weekly call on Saturdays, and so I just started tuning in there and listening a lot, but I haven't actually actively been like trying to solicit new investors. But I did get one to sign up under my affiliate link on Hivemind recently. But it was like an easy sale because he'd already been on there, and like I invited him to speak on the stage, and like he was like, hey, today's the day I want to sign up, someone send me their link because I'm doing it.
So yeah,
it was like, it was great though. I do want to do more of this so I can obviously make more than what they charge me per month and then some, but I don't know. I guess I can't directly answer your question because I don't have like direct experience with looking for new investors.
Well, just a game plan. I mean, you know, my game plan is like, I'm on a mission to debate house flippers. I love that. You know, I really like debating. I wouldn't say debating, but just kind of pointing out the differences of house flipping versus land flipping, because there's so many house flippers and they're losing so much money and their operation is so big. I mean, it's just like, oh my God. Like I was talking to a friend of mine. He lost $20,000 because somebody broke into the house and stole all the copper in the refrigerators. $20,000. And it's just that anxiety between the opening contract to the closing close is just like a roller coaster, you know? And when I send out my mailers and I get my contract signed, it's for 6 months. And I can sell it to whoever I want and I can cancel it at any time and there's no deposit. So all the leverage is on my side, you know, and that's exactly what they teach at the Land Profit Generator. And that's why I'm like so thankful, because when I first got started, I was so intimidated because I just didn't trust contracts. I didn't trust the way big business works, you know, and I thought that there's no possible way I could, you know, get out of this. I was like, yeah, there's a cancel anytime escape clause. I just didn't understand how that worked, you know? And so once I did, that was just really, really, really encouraging to me to get started, because all the leverage is in your power as the investor, all of it, you know? And as a house flipper, I don't even think they like tie it up with the seller. Like another house flipper can come in and like offer more. So they don't even like file memorandums of contract. So they can sell to somebody else. And it's just such a wild west that, especially for you, when you're talking about control, oh man, I think both of us would have a heart attack doing that stuff. You know, it's scary. Yeah, I was in a room and they said, there were 67,000 registered real estate agents and investors in Dallas alone. 67,000. That terrified me enough to just not do it. So I was so happy they told me that before I got invested into it. Yeah. I just remembered. And one thing I was hoping to talk about today was like some of the performing states right now. Because, I mean, obviously you want to go from macro to micro, you know, like pick a state, you know, and then pick the county that you want to work and then focus on that county. Right. And so, you know, as I've been doing this, I'm curious about what you think about it. The most competitive and the highest prices county and states, it takes more mailers. You know, it takes more mailers. It takes more marketing. And so, and typically in the Northeast, you know, New Jersey, did you know New Jersey is the highest, most expensive property per acre in the country? Isn't that crazy? $180,000 an acre in New Jersey. And Wyoming's only three. Okay. I was really expecting Arizona, New Mexico, but yeah. So when I talk to some new investors, I just think they're going too aggressive after some of these states that are going to spit them out, you know, and I don't think they understand the background of some of these states. And so, again, they're trying to put a square in a round hole, you know, and just because you're from New York and you land flip doesn't mean that there's properties in Manhattan County or New York City. You know, you really want to look where the sales inventory is. And that was one thing I was just really hoping to discuss with you today about, like, what is sales inventory? What are good areas? What's a bad area? Have you came across that a lot? Talking to other investors, like especially new ones, where they just want to get started and just like get some traction first before they just like, you know, move into these higher price points and everything. I have, definitely.
So you can go ahead while I think about okay, my experience. Cause, I mean, it varies, you know. Some people just don't really know where to start, and I kind of feel like what I've actually learned recently is you should start with the buyers first. Mm-hmm. Find out like who's buying. If your strategy is to target builders and developers, then understand where they're developing and then build a relationship with them and then find out what they're looking for and then go find it and give it to them.
So. Great point. Yeah. That's the thing I like about builders too, is just because they haven't bought property in this city doesn't mean they're not, right? I mean, if they're in that same county, you know, who's to say they won't buy the property that's like literally like 2 miles over the city line into the next city? And so when I targeted my builders in Arkansas, I had zero problems. As long as it was in the same county, you know, they may not have done deals in this one particular subdivision of this one particular city, but I had zero problems targeting them. And you're right. So you're talking more about reverse engineering, like their buyers, is a really good point. Yeah. And I just wish new investors would just get started small and do five deals, just do five quick, easy deals, and don't worry about the money. Don't try to be a millionaire. Just do five deals. You know, just like you said, you know, you're at that 10 marker. And so you're really getting the groove of like deed recording and like what questions to ask and like, what does a due diligence report look like and everything. And so my advice would just be figure out a way and really consult with your program or your system or your support system or coach on how can I just do five quick, easy deals? Like what does this kind of county look like? What kind of population, what kind of highway structure, what kind of economics and demographics are actually in an easy county, you know? And because I do feel people's, if they struggle, it's because they're just random or they're going after price points that are too high for them right now. Those are the two biggest pain points I see with new investors that I hope by listening to this podcast and kind of bring them back and say, hey, listen, I'm going to go after a lower population, a lower economic range, and a lower growth rate, and really just focus on deals in these kind of cities and counties, you know? Yeah, definitely. And then they get out of that pit of despair, right, Mason? I mean, I'm sure you've seen this, right? When you get this high, when you're getting started, you know, and then you just fall off a cliff. Like if you bomb on your mailer, it's just like you're the worst, stupidest person in the world, you know what I'm saying? And then once you start to get that response back, you start climbing out of that pit of despair. And it's just like the most rejuvenating thing in the world, you know, to be validated as an investor. So, yeah.
Definitely. I feel like the full like final validation will be when I'm making more than the day job. So I can confidently say, all right, there's too much opportunity cost here and I have to leave the day job.
Yeah. 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 I do that all day. I'd love to be able to maybe talk about it offline, but it's also just reverse engineering our mailers. What does that mailer look like to support this many deals a month, you know? And, but yeah, that's really fun. That's the fun part. And, but yeah, just getting started with it is, I would say wholesaling is the easiest thing to do. The absolutely, and not just for people listening here, but just even for myself, you know, it's definitely the easiest thing to do because you don't have to build that whole back end of your business, right? That marketing team department of, what does a listing look like? Who do I, the builders, what's my scripts, you know, responding to buyers and all that stuff. That is a separate leg of your business. And if you're just wholesaling, you don't have to build that out because you're, when I wholesale properties, literally, I just email another investor, the APN and the county number or the county name. That's it. No pictures, no due diligence, no nothing. And then they come back and they say, okay, I'll offer you $5,000 or $6,000 or whatever it is to assign a contract over it. And I think that would be like, they'd start getting some wins. They get over that speed bump and, oh man, that'd be incredible. Yeah. I really wish that people focused on that more. Yeah. Especially in houses. They're so used to it. They do it in houses. You know, why can't they do it in land? So
yeah. for every single transaction, do you file an affidavit, a memorandum?
I want to, I really do. I discussed this with my transactional coordinator. I gave him the word, do it, but I haven't because I just haven't had any problems yet. But I do find a tremendous value in doing that. But I also think because it might be because of the price point of the properties I'm going after. I'm making $10,000 to $15,000 a deal. I'm not doing those $200,000 properties. So maybe if I was doing those bigger properties, I would be worried about competition and other investors or other realtors coming in and snaking it from me. So maybe that's why. But that is a freaking phenomenal question right there. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I've always been nervous about like showing a property to an investor. Like I already know that they're savvy enough to look up and see who the owner is and then just go take it out from under me. So,
I mean, it's only 13 bucks to file it. I mean, you know what? I mean, I would probably make it part of my protocol. My first 10 deals, do it. It only costs like, I mean, for my counties, it only costs $13 to record the thing. I think it's like $10 and then $3 a piece for each page. So it's like 13 bucks. You're done with it. You don't have to worry about it anymore. It's off of your plate, you know? So yeah, that would be a really good tip. Yeah. Oh, but the other thing about it is that people forget, you have to close the loop on that. So once you file a memorandum of contract, you have to go back and like cancel it out. Okay. So you have to file another one once you go to sell it and you actually close that property out. So that's just a tip that people don't remember.
Okay. What if your contract expires and you never closed on the property?
The contract expires and you close on the property?
You never closed on it. The deal just falls through, but you recorded that.
Yeah, I would definitely close the loop on that. Absolutely. Yeah. Because then you're going to get, that owner going after you and trying to sue you to get you to release it. But I think the contract is not valid anyway, so I'm not sure about that, but yeah, you definitely want to close it anyways. You cancel it or close it. You gotta close that loop on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is that like, I guess it's a separate template of, a release of memorandum and agreement.
Yeah. It's like you're filing it. It's just like, you just word it differently in like the signatures and stuff like that. You just word it differently on the page. So thankfully I've never had to do that. I mean, right now the way my business looks like, I have a transactional coordinator and a VA. They do everything. So the exact language, and they even file the deeds on SimpliFile. They're even, making offers, they're doing my comps. So at this point, my business and the system is built out that I'm kind of like the Pinocchio master, or I'm just kind of like managing the whole process. I definitely don't want to be doing it. So I haven't talked to a seller or a buyer in over a year, and I don't want to. I really don't want to. So yeah, everything's pretty much through email for me right now. Yeah, that's what's okay. Me. Yeah.
Well, how do you get to that point? Because that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I know that there's stuff I could shift off to a VA. I have like two VAs, but I just, sometimes I'm just so busy working in the business and on the business that I just don't even have time to like think about how I could shift that over to them. And they're also not, both of them aren't even in the US. So
yeah,
another mental block. Like, how do they correspond to people, make calls
or receive? Yeah, well, that's amazing. I hope we get to talk again about this, because I can go on for hours about this, because this is a really cool topic. And I don't feel, you're right, no one really talks about this. Like, there is a phase where you make that decision and you change your business model, right? And that's really what we're talking about, is this pivot point, right? And it's amazing. So before I did that, I didn't feel like I had a real business. It felt like a hobby. It felt like a hobby to me that was making me money and was cool and was exciting. And maybe this is going to be, this business is going to make me a millionaire, but it didn't feel like it was like a real business until I actually had an employee. And when I say employee, it's like a subcontractor, VA. I'm not paying them benefits and stuff. But once I did that, and I realized what they could do for me, it just blew my mind. I was like, wait a minute, you can format the lists, you can upload the leads, you can create the listing. And so for anybody watching this, guys, would you rather create your own listing that's going to take you 6 hours, or have a VA do it for you for about 20 bucks, and then you review it for about 6 minutes? Okay, so that's what my business looks like. I just want to review and critique and then give them approval, like give them a thumbs up. This looks good. Go ahead, post it. You know, that anybody can do within 6 minutes. And, you know, so I have some training with them, and not every VA is like perfect at everything that you want, you know, and I don't expect them to be, but I know I want my pictures to look like Instagram pictures. So when I'm looking at them and I'm looking at the ad copy, I'm like, hey, listen, this is the theme we're going after. Just make it fit this theme, you know, and then they go and do it and they come back. And it's just so much easier for me as the manager, quote unquote, to just kind of control that, you know? And so I would say for my business right now, Mason, I pick the county, I download the leads, I upload the leads, I do the mailer. After that, I'm done. Because those, to me, that's the real, real important brain of the process. And I instruct my VA on how to make offers. What price points are we going after? If it's over $100,000, yeah, you can go as high as 40%. You know, I give them this range that they can go in, and I just throw it out there. And so it was also from a good friend of mine. He said, you know, if you had a VA that was only 80% accurate, you would be a millionaire. That's what he said to me. I was like, wow. And he was like, because the other 20%, you can manage that. You can manage that 20% risk as long as they're doing the process the right way. And you're using the right contracts, you're pretty safe. You can always come in and save the deal. You can always come in and call the client. You can always come in and fix things, right? But if I'm doing the mailer and they're not going after like Miami Beach property and just wasting my marketing money, I'm pretty safe. You know, they're just kind of taking the ball from there. So I would say that anybody that does want to do this and make over $100,000 a year, you absolutely need a VA. And if you don't have one, then you're probably just a control freak. You know, you're probably just a control freak. And that's what's going to hold people down from scaling their business. And that's totally fine. I mean, you could do that as you wish, but it's just going to cost you more time. And I want time, you know, I want time for sure. Yeah.
I think that's the reason we're all doing this, is to buy back our life, right?
Yeah.
Our own time, live life on our own terms.
That's exactly what attracted me to it was, you know, my fear as a truck driver was if I didn't go to work, I didn't get paid. And I just feel like my business is working itself, you know, it's working itself, whether I'm doing it or not, my system is doing it. So I just got to get the marketing out and then make the offers at the right price points. And then have my assistants follow up. And when they follow up, they're sending an email, they're sending a text, they're sending a voicemail, and they're hammering that person until they accept. So that's one thing that I really hope. And that's another thing. I've said a lot of things, but that's another thing that I really hope the new investors watching this is understand the value of follow up, because I feel like as land flippers, we send out mail. And we just wait for them to accept it. And we hope they don't call us and ask us anything, you know. And I feel like the people that make serious, serious money in this business are the ones that have a follow-up business, a follow-up sequence to their process and their offers. Yeah.
Okay. So is your VA like in the States?
I have one VA, which I call my transactional coordinator. And then I have another VA in the Philippines. Okay. So now when I say transactional coordinator, they're kind of like, I want them to have a brain. I want them to like, know this is not a good idea. You know what I'm saying? And so sometimes with virtual assistants, like you can have them do a task like comps or something, and they're comping like a $500,000 property all the way down to 10,000. Like they're not taking out outliers, you know, from the top to the bottom. And I think that is a very big problem with VAs. Is they're so scared of making a mistake of getting fired, they're going to regurgitate all the information. And as investors, like you, like when you were doing your options trading, some Yahoo coming in and just putting 500 grand on black, that doesn't happen very often, right? So you're not really taking that into consideration, right? But you're watching what Bank of America and Goldman Sachs and Chase Bank and the Chinese are doing, right? So you're watching where the big money is going. And so it's managing those outliers and understanding and how to communicate to your virtual assistant. Don't worry about this, the top. Don't worry about the bottom. I'm looking for like the average mean, right? And communicating that to them to kind of free them up to not dive too deep into the weeds. I do think that is a problem for them. Yeah.
Okay. But this transaction coordinator is like a part-time stateside person.
Correct. Yeah. And I just think it's because they're American. They get the concept, you know, like understand the concepts. Like I don't need my virtual assistant to understand the whole concept of all the business. I just need them to be task oriented. Right. But I need my transactional coordinator to understand the concept of what we're doing. And those 57 properties or 67 properties, like the concept is I'm targeting RV owners that will buy my property for 13 grand instead of 25 living in an RV park. That's the concept, you know? So that's the kind of properties I'm going after. That's the kind of pictures I want. That's the kind of description I want. And that's the kind of language I want on the phone too, you know, is I'm competing on price against a certain target demographic, and they get that concept and then they can extrapolate that to the VA. Yeah.
Okay. So do you use DataTree or Agent Pro 24/7?
DataTree all day, every day, man. That is okay. The best. It's amazing. I love it. I was so relieved. And I asked that question when I first got, I was so obsessed with using the right leads. You know, I asked that to everybody. And so, I used ListSource a couple times and I got bad results. And I found out that the leads I was getting were 2 years old. 2 years old. Maybe that was part of the reason why I struck out on that county, because not only was my data wrong, but my leads were old too. So yeah, they're probably like 4 years old. So they're 2 years old. And I found out that DataTree, I believe, updates their records like every quarter or every month, like something insane, like very consistently, very, very new. And we're marketers and we're data people and we need fresh data to do the right marketing. So yeah, that's why I stuck with DataTree. I love it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess it also depends on the county and how readily available that data is, right? Because if they're stuck in the Stone Age, then 20 years ago, they updated it, right?
Yeah. I mean, I came, yeah, that's another good thing. Cause I did a county once and, it was here in Texas and they updated their records. Like, I think it was like 1990, they went digital or something like that, or like 2000 or something like that. And like, they basically didn't have records before that. So I went to the deed recording office myself to look for this deed. And it was such an interesting experience because back then everyone wrote cursive, you know, and it's so cool to be in a library and there's like nothing but books of just like signatures and everything. It was a pretty cool experience. But yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I guess if you're focusing just on stuff that's zoned for mobile home or RV use, then you're filtering for that in DataTree is one of your criteria.
Yep. Okay. Not zoning codes though. I don't do zoning codes, just zero improvement value. That's it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And then when the seller gets in touch with your transaction coordinator, then you have them ask, is this zoned, or you do the due diligence and you make sure it's zoned properly after that point?
Well, they make an offer and then I do the due diligence. So they're making an offer based on the comps and the listing values. Okay.
Okay.
I want speed. I want an offer out like in 5 minutes. If somebody calls, I want you to have a conversation with them, do the comps, check out the listings, be comfortable with it, and send out an offer in the email and call them on the phone and say, I just sent out your offer. It's on the way. I sent it to you in the mail as well. And that's what we teach at the Land Profit Generator, is how to exactly target and do your comps and talk to the client as a buyer and a seller, right? Because they're totally different conversations. So yeah, big deal.
Okay. So are you sending out a mixture of blind offers and neutral letters, or is it just neutral?
Just neutral. I just know exactly what I'm going after. And so the thing I love about neutrals is it creates a big funnel. It creates a big funnel. And if you had a car, if you had a car and the car is worth $1,000 or $10,000, and I sent you a letter and I said, I want to buy your car for $1,000. You don't know my name. You don't know who I am, but I'll send you $1,000. 99% of the time, you're just going to throw that letter in the trash, right? But if your best friend comes over and he says, you know what? I just lost my job. My wife just broke up with me. I just got kicked out of my apartment. I need somewhere to stay. You're not using that car. All I got is $1,000. Do you think you can give me that car for $1,000? I know it's not good enough for what it's worth, but man, I can sleep in it. I can use it. It would help me get back on my feet. I guarantee you that you may not do that for $1,000, but you'll be, your odds of accepting that deal will be a lot higher, right? And it's because you already have that relationship in contact with that person. So when I instruct my VA to talk to my sellers, it's to create a relationship with that, because people don't buy and sell from people they don't know. They don't know, you know. I don't want to sell Pappy's land that he spent his whole life trying to save up money for to Joe Schmo that just sent me a letter in the mail. But you know what? Fred just called me, and I really like Fred's story, and he sounds like a nice guy. And it's not what I was looking for, but he pays cash. So I guess, you know, that's what I'm looking for right there. Yeah. So.
Okay. And then in terms of selling, are you just, is it Facebook Marketplace, Zillow, or everywhere? What's your primary?
Facebook Marketplace.
Okay.
Yeah, 100%. I should say 90%. So 10% Craigslist, but I'm obsessed with Facebook Marketplace. If you can build a business and sell things on Facebook Marketplace, you will make money. If you understand how to sell on Facebook Marketplace, there's 2.3 billion unique users of Facebook. And guess what? They all have Marketplace on their phone. So, you know, it's a big thing for me. Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I've been finding that's where I'm making basically 100% of my sales. And like, I've posted a few things on like using like a fixed rate, flat fee MLS in North Carolina, for example, but I have zero leads. And also like it goes into a black hole. Like I was curious, well, who's receiving these leads? Cause I'm not able to like, put my contact info in there, but I don't even see that on the post. Like when realtor pulls from this website. And so I submitted my information. It's like some guy named Jim, and Jim is handling all my leads. Like I have no idea if it ever goes under contract or if he sends out offers or anything. Like I was just like, it was like a not so good feeling. And the reason I did that is because I wanted Zillow to pull it over, because you know they've bifurcated their listings now into listed by a realtor. It's on MLS versus FSBO.
That's why. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And I've heard FSBO traffic has gone from like thousands of views per day down to like 10 for land investors listing on Zillow. So honestly, like I only done it for a few properties that I wasn't sure would sell on Facebook. And I think I just have to adjust the price on Facebook. And back to Craigslist, none of mine have actually stuck. That's been my biggest obstacle that I think a lot of people gloss over, because like I guess most successful land investors don't have issues with their accounts or something. But I know Craigslist, everyone has an issue with it being stuck, and the algorithm will like just rip it off.
Well, it's the VPN. My VAs use VPN, and they get everything to stick. And so I don't even know how to do a Craigslist. I don't even know how to get it to stick. It's the VPN, because if I post it on my personal account, it will not stick. When I have my VAs do it on a VPN, it sticks. Yeah.
And so the VPN, which location are they saying that they're posting it from?
America. Yeah.
Okay. But is it like Craigslist server in America?
I'm not sure how detailed the server is, but it's definitely an American VPN. Yeah.
Okay. Just curious. That's cool. Yeah, I still need to tinker around with it some, and like Facebook too. I'm still trying to figure out how to like boost ads without it getting blocked, because I've tried like several iterations down to like just a picture and almost zero text at all. And it would still flag it as, oh, this is related to a housing opportunity. But before that, I would say owner financing available. I'd say, oh, this is related to a credit opportunity. And so it would flag it and block my ad. So I'm still like working through that. But only until recently, I just saw that I can choose between like my business page running the ad versus my personal profile. So maybe that's the big difference that
it is
I need.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of the things we're going to talk about in the class Monday, April 12th. livelandclass.com. You can sign up. Anybody can sign up for free. And that's in the Facebook group. And if you're not in the Facebook group, Land Profit Generator, you need to be. So that's where all the magic happens. And one thing that I'm really thankful for is just understanding how Facebook really works in 2021, because they changed their algorithm like quarterly, you know, and just on a whim. And, you know, one thing that I really had to learn the hard way was I couldn't post pictures of kids. I couldn't post pictures of animals. I couldn't post pictures of a shovel because they considered it a weapon, you know? So there absolutely is a very, very, very hard line they won't let you cross, you know? And so being integrated and educated and supported with other land flippers is absolutely super crucial. So if you're listening to this and you're just like thinking, oh, this is kind of cool, you got to join, because it's like you're going to have questions and you need answers for them. You absolutely need answers for them. And so I was that guy 3 years ago, too nervous to ask the question. I would just be in the comments of the post. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was too scared to leave a post. I would just like leave a comment in the comments, you know? And, but yeah, so it sounds to me like I would definitely post with the business account and then not boost. I would not boost. I think I have boosted before, but I was just testing it. But you definitely don't want to boost. You want to target more, you know, and you're going to get way more success with that. And then once you start depositing money into that account, they kind of like unflag you as like, this guy's a paid member. You know, and so when I found that out, you actually get, and this is a super cool, huge tip, you actually get their phone number. Okay. No one can find Facebook's phone number for customer support. Only paid members have that phone number. And you can only get that through Business Manager when you're doing ads. So even if it's just putting $5 in just to get that number is so crucial, you know, so you can get somebody on the phone and say, I don't understand. Can you explain this to me? If I remove this picture, will you unflag it? You know? Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So I think in my mind, I need to just see those as two separate things. Cause I think initially just being super naive, I would assume boost listing is the same as an ad. And I understand you can create audiences and do this targeting, but I thought that they were still kind of one in the same, just like a non-targeted ad, but yeah, it seems like it's completely separate.
You're things. Right. Yeah. Please give me a moment to speak on that, because boosting is like Facebook's way of taking your money for free. So like, imagine like Dallas, like we're both in a DFW area. I think there's 10 million people in this Metroplex. Now, all of us have different interests. We speak different languages. We have different jobs. We're going to different Facebook groups. We're different economic ranges. Now, what if I was trying to sell fish? When I boost it, it's going to put that ad out to sell fish to just anybody and everybody. It does not have any algorithm at all. When you target it, you could target it down to, well, the odds are Middle Eastern people, 66% of their diet is fish. Okay, great. I'm going to target Middle Eastern people. And then between the ages of 26 and 55, people eat fish. Okay, I'm going to target that range. And then actually middle management occupations eat fish more often than anybody else. I'm going to pick that occupation in this area right here. And so you can draw like a circle. And you can also target people that are in a Facebook group about eating fish. Next thing you know, that's a way more targeted Facebook ad than just boosting to just 500 random people that don't have anything in common. So that is the big difference. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's definitely helpful. I will have to discipline myself.
It just takes longer. I know. It just takes longer. I know.
It's really just that learning curve.
That boost button. Yeah.
Yeah. And the reason I did that is the previous I had success when I was like trying to remotely manage our greenhouses, and I would just boost the listing because in that case, you actually don't need to target. It's, everyone needs a place to live. So I guess that's why it worked in that case. But
yeah, well, when I found out that like it's targeting people that might drive by that zip code, I was like, no. I need them to live here. You know, I don't want to target Fred that just drove by this zip code in the last 20 minutes, you know. I want to target people that live here. So yeah, big difference. Yeah, that's super cool.
So I've purchased a few Facebook marketing courses, and only one that's specifically tailored for real estate investing, actually like wholesale, virtual wholesaling for houses. But what do you recommend is like the best resource, go-to resource for learning how to do Facebook marketing for land?
Well, number one, in the coaching program in the Land Profit Generator, we speak on that on a weekly basis, and they go over exactly how to do that. Number two, my favorite person is Ty Lopez. I follow Ty Lopez. I've taken his marketing courses. As a land flipper, marketing, we are marketers. At the end of the day, I have an uncle who's a banker, and it's like a super fabulous position he has and everything. And he says, at the end of the day, I just manage risk. He's like, that's all I do. I just manage risk. And so as an investor, you and I and everybody listening to this, we want to manage risk. And that risk is that $5 or $20 of boosting, right? And that risk is also the 5,000 mailers you sent out. That's the risk, right? And your time, you know? And so we're trying to manage that down. And so that's what targeting is, like targeting it down. So yeah, I would definitely say that, you know, now Ty Lopez is definitely not going to talk about how to do land flipping ads, you know, but I do love him and support him and a big fan. And obviously our coaching program is specialized in exactly how to do that, because that's what we do every single day. So yeah. And in fact, all day, like, you know, I think Facebook, we have coaches that did like 100 deals in like 50 days, made over 700 grand, 50 days, all through Facebook. Every single deal was sold through Facebook. And when you put that in perspective, you're like, man, if he can make 700 grand in a month or 50 days, can I make seven? Can I make like 1% of that? Yes, you absolutely can. But you got to follow these criteria. So yeah, engage, ask questions. It's definitely going to be a learning process, but that's why we're all here. It's fun. It's fun to support each other too. Yeah.
Okay. So you're, I guess your VAs have, like, you just add them to your business page and they're able to post the ads and do all that stuff for
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And do they also interact with the buyers through Facebook Messenger?
Oh yeah. Like I'm out. Like once I mail, I'm done. So I am done. And I'm just kind of approving listings, and I'm just kind of approving like offers and stuff like that. You know, I'm just kind of approving stuff from there on. And so yeah, they take it from there. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. But do you ever use like the conveyor belt, where you do like the RVM, then the text, and then the email, and then do a snail mail? Or is it, have you heard about the conveyor belt? It's like a maybe more popular in single family, but it's actually like flipping around. Instead of doing mailers first, it's doing that very last. And you're just using, like, I guess cheaper marketing.
Cost a fortune though. I mean, to do that, it might work, but it's gonna cost a fortune to do that. Now you're talking about skip tracing and like text campaigns, and that takes money. I mean, you're talking, you got to pay for that phone number, and then you got to use Mojo. You got to use all these complicated scenarios because they're going to ban your phone number. I don't like to do that. I like to just send my marketing out and then the sellers contact us. Right. So if I send out 4,000 letters and I get 200 phone calls, I know these are my 200 sellers right here. So these are my two. I got to figure out what their problem is. Why are they interested in selling? And I'm going to hammer that down. I want to sell this property because I don't need it. Perfect. Let's talk about it. I'm considering selling this property if you make me a good offer. Okay. I'm competing on price. Okay. I want to sell this property because my husband died and we just don't need it. And you know what? I never cared for it. Perfect. Now I'm going to paint the dream to her about, hey, listen, you know, you don't have to worry about this anymore. Once we send you the money, you're never going to have to worry about paying taxes. And this is going to be a good experience for you and your family. And you're going to be able to go on vacation. This is going to be awesome, you know? So, but I don't do any of that until I mail. So that conveyor belt, like, I know that house flippers pay 3 to 15 times more in marketing than land flippers. 3 to 15 times more. So that means that they're, you know, when, I think it takes me anywhere between like 200 to 300 mailers to get a deal. I think it's like 12,000 mailers to get a deal or something like that with house flips. That's a lot of mail. That's like $6,000-$7,000, you know? And so if they do anything wrong in that, that's, oh man, that's tough. And then they're calling and texting. That is such a huge operation. I'm not interested at all. I'm looking for the easy way out. Yeah, for sure. I want my time back, like you said.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense. So, talked about partnering on deals. Because I feel like different people have different approaches, but I've heard a typical thing, if it's like an equity split, it's like 60-40, 60 going to the person that puts up the capital. Is that what you see, or do you ever partner on deals at all anyway?
Typically it's 50-50. When I partner, I do 50-50.
Okay.
When I partner, I do 50-50. I've done it for as little as 30% and as high as 50%, because I was that new guy and I was that new guy trying to get the best deal for myself. And I felt like people were taking advantage of me. So, but I've done as low as 30% because I know this guy's a stud. He's going to get it done. And I trust him to follow through with everything. Because if you're taking on a partner on a deal, that partner, the money might make sense on paper, but it is your guys. If you're listening to this, just because you have a money partner doesn't mean that deal's going to close. You have to follow up. You have to commit yourself to that deal. And if you're not, then, oh man, please just wholesale deals. Just wholesale it, you know, just wholesale. So yeah, you got to be committed to the follow-up and you got to be committed to your marketing if you're going to be taking on partners for sure. So that's what I'm looking at. When I've partnered with guys for a low rate, I've looked at some of the deals that they've done. I've looked at like what their response rate was. I've asked them, how many hours a day are you putting into this? How often are you posting? How fast do you respond? Like those kind of questions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So kind of vet them out first before even determining if you want to partner.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Do you feel like that's a way to really like scale the business, or is that just kind of like nice supplementary ancillary income, the partnering?
For me, it's scaling me. Hell, heck yeah. Yeah, for me, because I'm now able to do more deals without managing the deal, you know, because for my deals, I'm managing like the process in my LLC. If I partner with you, I'm giving you the money and I'm turning around and I'm saying, hey, call me when it's done, you know? So for me, yeah, absolutely. Now for the investor, like let's say I partnered with you, heck yeah, that's a way of scaling your business. What I find a lot of times is it's the anxiety of closing the deal right? And when new investors are moving into these higher price points, if you have a partner, you'll be able to call me up and say, hey, listen, what do I do next? You know what I'm saying? So that is almost like hiring on a consultant, right? You know? And so that's huge. That's huge. And whenever I've ever partnered with people, I do want them to call me and ask me or keep me in the loop if you need me. You know, like you got somebody else fighting for you that you can use their resource and expertise. So I do think it's a win-win for everybody. And that anxiety of not having to pay for it is obviously huge. So yeah, I think it's something to jumpstart and get it going and build credibility fast.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But I've heard like a few different arrangements. Say it's maybe the person already bought the property, but you're bringing the seller. I'm just wondering like kind of the rules of engagement. I mean, maybe there are no rules. My mind just goes there to rules, but have you seen like different things like that? Like I bring the seller, you have the
oh,
buyer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Wild West. It's Wild West. You know, I've done deals where I've funded people to do their mailer. And I've said, everything that you get from here, I'm getting 30%. I'm getting 30% on this mailer, you know, and if we need my money to close the deal, we're going to use my money too, you know? And then I've had people approach me that says, hey, listen, if I bring you deals and you sell it, we'll split the money, you know? So there's, when it comes to partnering, there is absolutely, it's Wild West. It really is. I'm just really fair to the other guy because I want continued business. You know, if you were in a pinch and you had to do a deal with me and I took 70% and you took 30%, after that deal's over, you're not going to use me anymore, right? Because you know you can go get money somewhere else. So yeah, that's my approach. That's my approach.
Okay. So back to the criteria that you're using to evaluate the person, but how quickly do you expect them to need to respond and how many hours they're investing in this and all that?
Well, daily. Okay. I want to hear the word daily. So for sure. I want to hear the word daily. If it's not, then it's just a hobby to them. I want them to be obsessed with closing this deal. That's all. You know, I just want them to be committed to it. You know, when you go to somebody's website and you see a picture of them and their wife and their dog, they're putting themselves out there, right? If you go to their website and you're not seeing a picture of them, like, why not? Like, why wouldn't you put your family out there? You know, like I'm really proud of who I am in my business. So I'm proud to, you know, prove my credibility. Right. And so, if I go to a potential partner and I see that he doesn't have his pictures up, you know, there's like no interaction. And I look at the leads, you know, I've even sent a text message or a comment on the post and see how fast he responds to the comment or post, you know. And I remember one time I got a response in like 60 seconds and I was like, oh, okay, cool. You know, and that was really cool to see. And then just kind of verifying, you know, you just want to ask them, hey, where are you going to sell this? What's your target demographic? What's the market value and what are you selling it for? You know? Yeah. Do the numbers make sense?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Cool. I think we've hit on a lot of different things here. So
definitely.
What else are we missing though? Do you feel like there's something?
No, I just wanted to just talk a little bit about the event coming up April 12th and the Land Profit Generator at livelandclass.com. And just really just encourage new investors that when you're getting started to not try to make $1 million on your first deal, you know, let's just do 5 quick, easy, fast deals because most people that are getting into land flipping, this should not be something that saves you on your first 5 deal. Like you should not be like spending all of your money in your bank account. Right. And then like, if you don't get a response, you're going to get kicked out of your house. Right. So if that's the case, let's just get proof. Let's get proof of concept. Let's go through the process. Let's get some deeds recorded. Let's get some credibility. and then move it forward. So that would be just the biggest thing I wanted to cover, is like speaking to the new investor and, you know, focus on building your credibility and going through the process, just like you have, I have, we've all been there, and understanding, wow, like me personally, I spent 6 months trying to design a, literally learn HTML for no reason, you know what I'm saying? And now I know I'm never going to do that again. So that's cool. I really hope that helps. So man, Mason, I'm really happy we spoke. Man, I can't wait to talk to you again. And some of that stuff, like we talked about, we could talk for hours on. So some really good subjects.
Yeah. All right, cool. Yeah, we'll have to do a follow-up episode. Yeah. And yeah. Is there any contact information you want to leave for people to get in touch with you?
Yeah, just hit me on Facebook. You can find me David Van on Facebook. I believe I'm the only David Van on Facebook. The name of my company is Easy Land Investing. I work with a land profit generator, and my job, my role is I'm just playing support. That's all. When I got started and I approached Jack and I said, hey, listen, my business is growing. I just want to be able to give back some way, but I don't want to be a coach. I don't want to do that. Just, can I help? And so I just help with events and I help answer questions. So if you're in the Facebook group, holler at me. If there's something I can help you with, holler at me. And if you're new, just getting started and you got a question, holler at me again. So Mason, this is super cool. Really appreciate it. And I also go live on Clubhouse every Thursday at 4 p.m. I'm considering doing it every day. I'm not quite sure yet. It just depends on how many people. Last one I did was over 100. So I'm thinking maybe I might do it every day. I'm not quite sure yet, but this is a lot of fun for me. I really appreciate your time. This is awesome.
Sure. Thanks for getting on. So that's Thursday, every Thursday, 4 p.m. Central, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Perfect. Yeah, I'll include everything in the show notes as well.
Cool.
On like everything you just said, and maybe even a Clubhouse link. Although, do they make static Clubhouse links, or does it change every week?
I don't know. I think I'm going to have to just like, share my Facebook profile in like my Clubhouse profile. I think that's the only thing I can do. But that'd be good enough for me, man. I just really appreciate it. It's just fun. And I really hope we get to do it again. And I hope we get to have some barbecue sometime here in Dallas, man. So, you know, we're so close.
Definitely.
We're so close.
Gotta go to Terry Black's. I've been to the Austin location, but not the Dallas one.
I've never been there either. So that sounds cool. Let's do it.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. It's great. I go to Blues Barbecue though. It's pretty good. I've been there several times.
Yep. I'm a hard eight kind of guy. I like the open pit barbecue, you know?
All right.
So cool, man. But cool. I'm going to send you a Facebook message. I just we'll reconnect, and hopefully we can continue talking about our deals personally, and maybe we can help each other too. So that'd be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe on this new mailer comes through or something, I'll have a flood of inbound leads and yeah. Partner and stuff. We'll see.
Yeah. That'd be super cool.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Mason. Appreciate it.
Yeah, sure.
All right, brother.
All right, that's another episode of Scalable Real Estate Investing. Thank you for tuning in. Please be sure to leave a review and subscribe on whatever channel you're using to listen or watch these episodes. And also be sure to go to scalablerealestateinvesting.com, scroll to the bottom, and fill out the form to sign up for our email. And you could also reach me directly at mason@scalablerealestateinvesting.com. That's M-A-S-O-N @scalablerealestateinvesting.com. If you'd like to get in touch with me to either partner on deals or even be considered to do your own episode on this podcast. Thanks again, and have a great day.